to the 411 Child Podcast. Join us to get the 411 on child and adolescent development. Hosted by Beth, a child psychologist and college professor, and Jennifer, a teacher and wonderful mother. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic, Part 1, Adolescence Explained. In today's episode, we discuss some of the developmental reasons why teens act as they do. At the end, we'll provide some specific suggestions for parents and teachers that should help you to communicate better with any pre-adolescent or adolescent. Please enjoy the show. Today's episode is sponsored by the Attention Center of Tampa Bay. And I'm Beth.
And I'm Jennifer.
And today we're going to explain adolescence. Okay, well, we're going to try anyway explain adolescence. As we've talked about in our previous podcasts, it's interesting to understand children and adolescents, I guess young adults too, from a different perspective, not just from a textbook perspective where you're studying hardcore theory, but also through looking at experience and trying to kind of figure it out as you go along. And I have to tell you that that's exactly how Jennifer and I have done this all these years. But anyway, I thought we would start today by talking about how most people characterize teenagers, which is as, well, I don't know, when I say teenager, what do you think of?
Scary.
Scary, irresponsible.
No, actually, they're my favorite people.
Well, they're my favorite
middle school and high school kids are just amazing, partially because they're brutally honest.
Oh, they certainly are.
If you take the time to talk to them, they're brutally honest. But I think they're like this forgotten segment of our population. And it's so sad because they're full of wonderful thoughts and ingenuity. And
that's exactly right. And see, you went from... I was actually looking for all the negative words, and of course, you took it right to the positive, but I like that
because...
Okay, they're
ornery, they don't call on time, they don't call you,
And if they are your children, they are all of those things.
Yes.
I don't mean yours, I mean yours being any adult who's listening
Well,
to
they
me.
Will be in several
and,
years.
Oh, yeah,
because she's already counting down the old one about when she gets to drive.
Oh.
And she's only 7. So there you go.
Well, you know, and it's funny because they look forward to things like driving and vote. Well, okay, maybe not voting, but voting.
Well, I did.
That was weird. And you know, drinking and all
yes.
of that. And yet, really, what we as adults are counting down are the years when they're not going to talk to us, when they're going to start slamming doors,
yeah.
when they're going to start being all awkward around us. We can't kiss them, hug them, and, you know, mommy loves you, and they, you know, run away.
Yeah.
And that's really
okay,
the whole thing.
Thanks. Do you have tissue? No.
We have many tissues. And you know, you said they're brutally honest. And I have to tell you, and everyone who's listening will appreciate this. If you go Google Janice the Muppet, you will see what I've looked like all week. I did look exactly like Janice the Muppet. And as a child psychologist, of course, I have to be very careful about my appearance. And unfortunately, I had some... rather severe dental surgery earlier in the week, and I became this big swollen Muppet face. And so I had to really, really, really think about whether or not I could see the kids that we see in our practice or not. And, you know, particularly when we have a 9-year-old, and I was a little worried because I was meeting him for the first time. Hi, I'm this creepy-looking woman. But I'm going to help you with my big Muppet face.
I don't always look like this.
My big Muppet face. But it was interesting to me how every one of our boys, in particular,
yes,
commented on my face.
Well, and what's funny is, when I used to teach 7th grade,
yeah.
it was the boys that noticed my outfits.
Isn't that interesting?
They would have whole conversations about which outfit they like better.
And you know, that's... wow.
Because
right.
once they become adult men, they go, what shirt? What are you talking about?
Or, you know, the whole haircut thing, get a
yeah.
haircut, and
uh-huh.
I have to send a singing telegram to my husband
but
at work.
But they knew what shoes I wore with what outfits. Hello, it's English class.
Well, it's, you know, diversion. But they do care so much, and that's the thing that a lot of parents don't see.
Yeah.
They send their children to school. They send their children to other places.
Mm-hmm.
They send their children to the psychologist, whatever.
Yeah.
And they are caring, observant, When I said that the boys all noticed, they did notice, but they all, it was sweet. Every single one of them wanted to know, would I be okay? They wanted to know what was done, and I had to, for the most part, not tell them, because I don't even want to tell anyone what happened. And, you know, I don't want to create dental phobes. but, you know, it's hard because these kids really step outside of their own comfort zone, and these are all adolescents with whom I have a relationship with.
Yeah.
And, you know, our discussions are always about them, but I'm always very aware of the fact that they're aware of me as well. And it was this week where, although I looked like a big Muppet head, I really realized that this dichotomy of adolescence, this caring, as you said, positive, in, you know, creative, ingenious child, is usually not the child that parents see.
Yeah.
And it's not the ones that, that parents expect at home. It's the ones that they're surprised to see.
Yes.
And so let's kind of peel back a little bit how this whole adolescence thing works. Now, I know if any of you took child and adolescent development classes in college or read any of those thousands of books or talked to any of your friends, you know that adolescence is, you know, this time of body. Well, we call it puberty and body growth. In my field, we call it body betrayal.
Oh, isn't it such, though?
It
That's
is.
That's good. I like that.
Body betrayal.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, and we talked about this in a past podcast, that children have to learn three basic things. Walking, talking, potty training. Those are three actually very complex things, especially potty training, because you have to anticipate the urge and so forth.
Yeah.
Or one hopes. So by the time that they get to be about 12 and 13 years old, they have finally commanded their whole body.
Right.
And many of them feel very good about it.
Yeah.
Many kids are in sports or the arts or, you know, dance or whatever. And so they're doing something that helps them to coordinate their body.
Yes.
Now, culturally, it's interesting that we have those activities for adolescents. I don't think many people know why we do. They say, well, it's because, you know, it's something nice for them to do. Well, it helps the brain develop, actually. And there's a part of the brain called the cerebellum, which coordinates both our movement and our thoughts.
Okay,
well, as children move into this 12 and 13 years old stage, their bodies begin to change, of course. Now I feel like I'm back into our, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade.
No, I'm having a flashback of when my body changed.
Yeah, I wish
and
you
asking my mother, asking my mother, how long does this last? She said, oh, 5 to 7 days, dear. I said, no, like, how many years does this last, Mom? Yeah, because I did. You're right. I felt like I had been betrayed.
I asked the same question to my mother.
What's going on?
Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to be raised by parent. Well, my dad was a psychiatrist.
Right.
And my mother was of the mind that everything should be explained to her children in medical terms.
Okay.
So we were children who had all of the right words from the time we were very little, and embarrassingly so. And in fact, it's a big, long family joke about how embarrassing my father could be at the dinner table about teaching us about all his daughters about, you know, body parts and how they work. It could be one traumatizing or two very educational.
Oh, funny.
It was one of, or the other for all,
all
of us.
Yeah, I can
Each
imagine.
One of us had a different view of that, I'm afraid. But anyway, so we think of this body betrayal, and so here are these very confident children knowing how to walk, talk, and all of that, and all of a sudden, these very embarrassing things start to happen.
Yeah.
You know, they have acne, and, you know, their reproductive organs begin to waken and then grow and change, and, you know, then they get hairy, and all of that.
Or boobs.
Or boobs, or the whole thing is just really...
Excuse me, breasts in your household, I'm sure they've got...
Oh, gosh, in my house, they're probably called mammary glands. Anyway, but what's so interesting is that as adults, we forget. Oh, we remember our own tragic experience.
Our own tragic,
And it's easy for us to remember our tragic experience and put it on our children.
Yeah.
But here's what we can't turn off as parents. We then want to share, and we want to know about it, and we want to provide information.
Yeah.
And and all of that is exactly great. The problem is that the amount of embarrassment that a child feels has a lot to do with their personality. It has less to do with the family they're raised in and more to do with who they are inside. and how comfortable they feel in other areas of their lives.
That makes sense.
Those who are, you know, confident in their intellectual abilities,
right,
or their musical or their athletic abilities are a little more willing to accept the body changes. But for the vast amount of children, in the beginning, it's all
yeah.
very scary.
Oh,
and it doesn't
sure.
matter how much you tell them,
yeah.
it's still scary.
Yeah.
And so
and
let's
embarrassing.
Oh, very much. And that's where I said betrayal. So,
yeah.
and now let me explain. You know, boys in middle school have trick appendages, so to speak. And many people don't think about this. They really don't. And I have to be really honest. I'll share a story. Let's roll back time. But 88 or 89. And I was a new teacher in middle school teaching music.
Okay.
And I taught, actually, then it was junior high and elementary school I taught. And I was, in particular, I had a general music class that I was
okay.
covering for a friend of mine. And I was at the board, you know, writing some notes or something. And I asked for volunteers to come to the board to do something, write on the board. And I really didn't get any volunteers. The kids all knew me, but
yeah,
they just wouldn't volunteer. And I was used to working with junior high school kids, but I had only been teaching about a year. So in my ignorance and probably frustration and maybe even growing anger, I called on students to come to the board
okay.
and put answers on the board. Well, the first few that I called, it was fine, came up, and they did it. By like the fifth child that I called up, he refused to come up to the board. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
And I did everything I could in my mean teacher voice to yeah,
oh,
make him
no,
come
yeah.
up. And he eventually did with a book in front of him.
Oh.
Now,
oh.
I was, yeah, I was acute enough at that moment to realize that poor boy, I had just asked him to do probably the most embarrassing thing
yeah,
ever.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember how I handled it. I know I sent him right back to his seat, and he never looked at me again, ever, ever. I saw him in high school later on when I was
oh.
conducting high school orchestra. He wouldn't look at me. It was horrible. I had truly traumatized this poor boy.
Jeez.
And I know, terrible, awful, but I did it because I wasn't thinking, and
yeah.
that's kind of what happens
yeah.
for all of us. That, and I think for parents, it's more overthinking.
Probably. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, we want to give.
Right.
Yeah, and they just want you to leave them alone.
Yeah, they really do. Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing. So a lot of the focus about adolescence is on this puberty.
Yes.
There's little said about their brains. And while I promise
That's
not
true.
To go too far into theory today, I am going to at least bring this up because this explains adolescence exactly. That there's a part of the brain, the risk-taking
yeah.
part of the brain.
Yeah.
Now, there are actually two parts that work together. Those parts are fully mature by age 14. So by age 14, adolescents have very strong messages saying, oh yeah, baby, let's feel good, or let's go do it, you know? And girls and boys,
yeah.
there's no difference here. Their males and female brains act the same in this. So each one of us has a different optimal level of risk-taking
yeah.
that we like
yeah.
in our personality, but in adolescence, it's more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's evolutionary. Because if they don't have that risk-taking initiative, they're not going to move away from being identified with their family.
Okay, that makes
and,
sense.
Yeah, and
okay.
so their sense of self is tied up in this too.
Yeah.
When, as they're growing up, like you're giving your children their sense of selves, and your children are very confident children.
Crazy little children.
Well, no, but they're great. They're
they
very
are.
Confident
they
about
are.
Themselves.
They are, very confident themselves, yeah.
Yeah, and you can almost always tell when children are confident about who they are, when they are truly their little selves,
yeah.
those are parents who are trying everything they possibly can to help their children become their own, you know, individuals.
Yes. Yeah.
On the other hand, we love that when they're young. We don't like it so much when they get into pre-adolescence and adolescence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's this risk-taking part of the brain that pushes them
yeah.
to shut down from
okay.
their parents. But that's what it looks like. It's not what happens.
Yeah.
They're taking all of this sense of self that the parents have built in them, their teachers have,
mm-hmm.
their if they're in any sort of religious practice and, you know, sports, all
yeah.
these people, scouts, all of these people have helped form this child's view of self. What they do is they then take this risk-taking part of them and move forward, shut down a little bit talking to all of
okay.
the people they used to. It's not that they don't love their families, they do.
Yeah.
But they have to now compare this self with the self that their peers see, with the self that they see.
Okay.
And it's all very complicated.
It is very complicated.
It is. And it goes through their minds. Everything weighs very heavily on an adolescent mind.
Yes.
Do you remember that time?
Oh, absolutely.
And everything was
a big deal.
Oh, everything.
Did I say that right? I don't know that I just said that right to the person that I'm talking to. I don't know. What are they doing over there? Oh, my gosh. Does my hair look fine? Is my makeup look good?
Oh.
Why does the teacher not like me?
And that brings us to adolescent egocentrism. Which is, now we talk about egocentrism in adults as being, all about me, the world is all about me. And children have that, but it's necessary for the cognitive development.
Right.
Adolescents, it's different. With the shutting down that they do, with the sort of, somebody said the other day that her son was like an oyster, and I love that analogy because that's very much what it's like. They'll open their mouths wide at the times that they need to, and sort of the pearls come out.
Interesting.
But most of the time, it's shut tight.
Yeah.
And I think that if parents could understand this, in those moments, this adolescent egocentrism means that they're thinking about themselves in comparison to others.
Right.
To the exclusion at those moments of others. So they really can't.
Yeah.
See others in those moments.
Yes.
But the difference between adolescent egocentrism and egocentrism, according to like our friend Piaget, which was a cognitive thing for young children, is that they are capable of being in other moments where they completely see other people and care about others. Like my whole Janice the Muppet thing at the beginning of our talk today. So,
I just think sometimes our expectations of teenagers, it bothers me. It's the expectations we have of even children. Like, we expect them to not be good at the movies.
It's true.
So they're not. We expect them to have temper tantrums in the middle of a restaurant. So they do. We expect teenagers to be nasty, rude, and just ugly to us. So they are. And it's that living up to the expectations that others give you. And I think sometimes that's really true. Whereas if we expect them, you're going to sit down at the movies and you're going to watch the movie, they do. And I think with teenagers too, I think we have some expectations of them that they live up to, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we won't talk about that today because you bring up excellent points that we're going to talk about in our second part two. Exactly, part two of this, which are the actual teen issues of, what do you do about sex and drugs and drinking and staying up too late and sneaking out of the house and lying. And your perspective is coming from a teacher's perspective who has been in a classroom with these kids day in and day out. And that's what a lot of parents don't see because they only have their child or their children, their friends, their kids' friends. What they don't understand sometimes is that their children's friends always seem better than their own children when they're at their house.
Yeah.
And that's because they're away from that bubble that they're trying to separate from. So,
well, and we're so busy nowadays. We're so busy and we see them for a few hours a day, and most of that's they're locked in their rooms or on the computer or whatever. And
And so the second part of that was in this this adolescent egocentrism, there's a second idea called imaginary audience. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's all a part of their development.
Okay.
I should say ours.
Yeah.
Because
I still do that. Is that bad? Okay. Let's move on.
Well, I won't comment. But it's hard to have a friend who's a psychologist, right? But imaginary audience works like this, and I think many people who are listening probably are very much in touch with this, is that it's this idea that in the moment, everyone, of course, will notice anything that's different about me. And I'll give you the best example of this. It was many years ago when I was working at, where you and I used to work together, and I had an eighth grader, I think, come to my office and sit down and very, very upset that everyone in school was talking about her and about something that had happened that weekend at a friend's house, sleepover, and that it was all over school. Okay, now, when she said all over, she, in her very dramatic way, meant kindergartners as well. Now, you remember the school we taught in, I know. Kindergartners know anything about anything.
I know.
So.
And I really did not hear about anything about a sleepover when in third grade, so it was not all
yeah,
over the
no,
school.
No, it had not hit the primary school.
Yeah,
and, you know, with our the way as small as our school was, we knew everything about everything. And
absolutely.
I don't think anyone had heard anything about this particular event, but that's not the point. The point was that in her, this moment,
yeah,
she was just beyond hopeless. I mean, do you remember the big blow-up chair I used to have? The
yes.
big inflatable
yeah.
blow-up chair that I had in my office? She was sitting in that, just, you know, just flying all over that chair and, you know, crying, just sobbing, sobbing.
Oh, my goodness.
When she finally settled down, I said to her, "What is your best friend wearing today?" Now, I have to tell you, it was a non-uniform day. You
oh,
know, they had a free dress
convenient.
Day.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a free
yeah.
dress day. So,
yeah.
Because otherwise, that'd be too easy. But it was a free dress day. And I said, "What is your best friend wearing today?" She looked horrified. Like, I had slapped her across the face. "Well, I have no idea. We're talking about me."
Me.
Mm-hmm. It was at that point, I really had to take a few moments to not laugh. Because I really understood that what we were viewing in that moment were two things. The imaginary audience of the
yeah.
entire school
Everybody.
Laughing at
mm-hmm.
her. And the second part was adolescent egocentrism, that she couldn't even notice what her best friend was wearing. And yet she had this idea that everyone noticed
everyone.
Her.
Everyone, yeah. Wow.
And that's the crux of adolescence. Now, I had started with this 14-year-old. You know, we have the brain, the risk-taking part of the brain
yeah.
is strong. But what is not strong is the thinking part of the brain. And so the prefrontal cortex, which is where your forehead is, it is where our advanced thinking systems are.
Yes.
So that's where reasoning is, logic, planning, and thinking about consequences.
Okay.
So they don't have that full ability until, do you know?
You've told me. Is it 25?
It is 25.
Okay.
Yeah, 25 years old. This is a
That's
relatively
incredible,
it is, and this is a relatively new discovery, not made by me, but by neuroscientists.
But so you figure like there's 9 years difference or
11
years. Oh,
mm-hmm.
thank you.
That's okay.
I was an English major, not
11 years.
So 11 years between when risk taking
right.
matures
and the ability to
thinking.
Actually think through. Yes.
Wow.
And that's the problem with adolescence. 14 years old, risk taking very strong. You know, whee, what's going to
yeah.
happen?
Yeah.
You know, and the other part, which is supposed to tell us, wait a minute, young grasshopper.
Yes.
Let's think about what's going to happen mm-hmm. if we do this. If you cut school right now, there are many consequences that could happen, and you're probably going to get caught because you don't have a car, blah, 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 blah. So,
you know, I've been noticing that on Facebook when I'm on there, because
mm-hmm.
I have some of my former students.
I remember you said.
Are my friends on Facebook, which is just a weird experience in and of itself, but, and then I have some cousins and niece, you know, whatever, but,
right.
But what I noticed too is even into their 20s, into even 24, 25, 26, they're still taking these unbelievable risks, just, and not, I'm not talking jumping out of cars,
right.
I mean,
right.
moving in with people they shouldn't,
mm-hmm.
and getting engaged when they've known the guy for 2 weeks, and
right.
just things like that, that, yeah, they're still not thinking.
Right.
They're still
and,
not thinking, and they're still risk-taking,
well,
even into their 20s. So that makes absolute, that makes sense, though.
When did you make the most serious mistakes in your life?
I don't make mistakes. No, I'm just kidding. See, I've always been very cautious.
I know.
So,
but when have you made the biggest mistakes in your life?
That's a good question.
I'll be very honest. I made my most... My most severe mistakes in my life easily between the ages of 19
yeah.
and 24. And incidentally, what do a lot
yeah.
of young adults do in those ages? They get married.
Yeah, that's true.
They get married.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why the divorce rates are so high is that
yeah.
it's not so much that brains haven't changed, people haven't changed.
Yeah.
Societal support for
yeah.
the institution of marriage has changed.
That's true. Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so it used to be the expectation was once you got married, you figured it out. Yeah,
you
no matter what,
married.
You figured
yeah.
it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But,
I have to say the same ages, like 20, 21, 22. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because, you know, we really are thrown into the world of adults. And we want to be there. That's the funniest thing.
Yes.
We want to be adults by age 14.
Yeah.
And yet, even when we actually are adults, we're still not quite all the way prepared to do that until age 25.
No.
So for parents who are listening today, you might be thinking, wow, that explains a lot. Because I've had a lot of my students tell me that over the years.
Yeah.
And it's essential for all parents and teachers and anyone who works in any of the helping fields to understand that adolescents on any given day will show up either as a 5-year-old or a 20-year-old or a 14-year-old or all at once in the same conversation.
Yes.
And to do nothing but to stand back and give space.
Yeah.
To give space.
And sometimes just wait for them. Sometimes you have to lay the groundwork and then just let them and be open to them coming to you and being whoever they are that particular day. You just kind of have to be open to it, too.
Have you been surprised how open our clients are with you?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I have to tell you now, because you made me wait.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so our...
Just, we have an adolescent.
Yeah,
who's
adolescent. I'm not sure how long it is. So there you go. We have a little conversation at the beginning of our session. You know, nothing, you know, how'd we do this week in school? Nothing major. And then I turn my back, getting ready, you know, getting things out of my bag. So, Miss Jennifer, have you ever had any experience with girls and love notes? I said, well, I am a girl. So, yes, I have. And from there, just a little conversation where, you know, the note was... you know, read to me, you know, here's what I wrote and what do you think's going to happen? And, but in that moment, it was one of those moments where what confidence and what strength he had to come up with to ask me that question. You know, my back was turned, so that might've helped.
And complete honesty.
Complete honesty. It was unbelievable to me, but yeah, we had a little conversation and then, okay, well now it's time to...
focus.
Let's do our reading. But wow, it was an interesting moment.
And that, to me, I have more of those experiences than not. And I have ever since, you know, I've been in the helping field with adolescents. And but even when I go back, and I know you had this experience too of working with them when I was a camp counselor, when I was still an adolescent myself.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting to be in the world of adolescence, where it really is a lot like Lord of the Flies, where there really is sort of no leader, and it's the blind leading the blind, leading the stupid.
Yes.
And back again. And, you know, it's where the leaders, you know, start to become leaders, and the intellects become a little intellectual, and people begin to identify with different peer groups and so forth. Mm-hmm. And pull apart, and yet, in many ways, they bond very tightly together.
Forever. Yeah. At our old place of employment, I ran into a mother recently of a seventh grader I taught at the time. So he's 26 now?
Right, yeah.
And across the cafeteria, we saw each other, and she said that him and several of his friends were in Europe, friends from... kindergarten, were in Europe for Oktoberfest in Germany, and they had taken their girlfriends and their wives, and it was like, wow. I mean, but those kids at that school just bonded so closely. They were together for 9 years, and so many of them went on for 4 more years, and I've noticed that too. I mean, with my friends, is that, you know, especially with the Catholic schools, you bond because you're together.
Right.
For, you don't go to separate schools. You don't go to different middle schools. We were together for 12 years together.
Right.
And there's just a bonding that happens there.
Right. Well, I mean, you married your husband. How long have you known him?
I did marry my husband.
Well, wow. That was one of the smartest things I've ever said. What?
When did I meet him? He was 16 and I was 17 when we met.
And that was in school, right?
He was dating my best friend.
Okay. All right. So, you know, the interesting thing, too, about all of these bonding experiences that kids have is that they don't always serve a positive purpose to an adult. For example, you know, children who bond together and then are naughty, you know, and just create problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not juvenile delinquents. They're not disciplinary problems, really, but they're just naughty.
Yes.
on, you know, sitting up, staying up late at night. You know, they've been told 15 times by, they're having a sleepover, they can't play, you know, Wii or Xbox or whatever. And, you know, you find them at 4 in the morning, you know, drinking soda rice and blurring and playing. This is naughty behavior.
Yeah.
And what I have found in my years of working with parents is that they tend to worry so much that what is normal behavior will become quickly delinquent behavior or abnormal behavior.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more guilt these days by parents because they're not home so much. And it doesn't matter whether it's a single family home or not. I'm hearing it from both.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with the economy being as it is, more parents are spending more time struggling to work hard.
Yeah.
Or they're suddenly all at home together. And either will cause a lot of stress.
Yes. Yeah, when business is slow for husband, I go, please, please get some work because you're driving us nuts.
Yeah.
Because we have different rules
with
the kids. And that makes it very difficult when we're trying to school and he's got his rules and mine. Yeah.
And that's typical
involved.
In all families. Mm-hmm. And one of the struggles is for families to figure out how to come together and create one set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting is that a lot of families don't realize they have separate sets.
Yeah.
And divorced families do. And
that is
very confusing.
It is.
To pre-adolescents in particular. Mm-hmm. Adolescents are better able to handle it, but pre-adolescents are forever struggling with this, that there's the expectation that they follow mom's rules in mom's house, dad's rules in dad's house, and then if there are or if they're boyfriends and girlfriends, they have to follow those rules when they're in those houses.
But then what rules do they follow when they're out in society? Like
well,
the mall? Or...
They follow the ones, and this is what most parents would be happy to hear, that were instilled in them when they were young.
Okay.
And most of the times, it's mother's values.
Yeah.
It is usually the mother that gives the values to the children. And that's not a knock on males at all. It just simply is that no matter what, even working mothers tend to spend more time and a different kind of time with children.
That's true.
The types of discussions they have are different.
Mm-hmm.
And usually females are more worried and anxious about their teenagers in a different way than males are. Fathers are more worried about single topics like girls getting pregnant or dating the wrong men or, you know, I can't tell you how
that
many...
makes sense.
Can't tell you how many professional male friends of mine have called me asking me to go talk to their daughters about not dating particular people. Now, these males are married. What magic words do you... I don't know. You're a psychologist. You'll figure it out. Fix it.
Well, you've just given her the list of boys that she will date. So there you go.
Well, I said the same to all of them, which was clearly that daddy was not ready for the daughters to date yet. I mean,
Precisely, I have those
kinds of conversations.
Yes.
And,
oh, boy.
But mothers in general are more worried about just a spectrum of things. And so to help parents, I thought maybe we could give them some tips. And I'll give them formal things. Anything you thought about that has worked when you were teaching would be helpful, too. One of the things that we do is when we have adolescents who don't want to talk, even when they're with me or with Jennifer or anyone else, I give them books, very specific young adult books to read. And this was actually a technique taught to me by a very dear friend of mine who is a professor of young adult literature. And she and I co-taught for an entire semester where she taught adolescent young adult literature, and I taught adolescent development.
Okay.
We had the same class of students, and she sat in my class, I sat in hers, and it was really interesting. We went the whole term like that. I learned so much from her. I hope she learned something from me. But what I learned from her was that I could use these young adult books that are very thematic, especially with boys, to help them to open up a little bit and talk about what they're thinking about or worried about. It's a very rare adolescent male who will tell me what's wrong with them.
Yes.
I get answers like sort of, kind of, yup, I don't know, maybe.
Yup.
How much longer do we have?
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, it's those, but to me, rather, no, I'm not their parents. If I was their parents and I had to hear that day in and day out,
yeah.
I would be furious and tired and, you know, take them to a psychologist.
Right.
But in my role, instead, I listen carefully and I realize that what they're telling me is not that. What I'm hearing is, this is too embarrassing for me. Or what parents don't understand is, I don't know how to tell you because I don't know myself.
Right.
And mostly that's what it is.
Yeah. Something's going on, but I don't know how to put it into words. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't even know what it is. So how can I tell you?
Yeah.
And that's where these books help a lot. And so I actually give them books to read and I'm forever lending books out. And, but they have a mission, and that is to read the book and come back. And then I ask them questions. When I ask them questions, they're very pointed, and I somehow turn the conversation into their lives.
Into them.
Okay. Yeah. So parents can do that too. There's no, you don't need to go to school for that. That's just give them some books. We're going to, in the next week or so, have a separate 411 child. We actually have a 411child.com page. It will be up and running couple of days. And please feel free to visit that site, and you'll find some of my suggestions for giving some books to males and females and the different topics that... Mm-hmm. If you think something's going on with your child, give your child these books.
Okay.
And then talk about them.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and this is very hard for parents, but to change the messages that you give. So, please understand. Here's how an adolescent brain hears this. All right. So, the average parent, you know, rushes home from work and wants to see the teenager, and teenager comes home from school. Maybe it's a 15-year-old female, opens the door, throws her purse and her books down, and the mother says, "How was school today, dear?" Now, that's not scary, right? Nothing sounded bad about that.
No.
But here's what she heard. "Oh, you're home. Tell me every single thing that happened today. I want to know every interaction you've had. I want to know everything you had on your mind. And tell me, did you kiss someone? Did you do drugs? Did you skip school?
Yeah.
Were you bad today?" Mm-hmm. That's what a teenager hears in her mind.
That's true.
Yeah, it is true. And I used to hear that too when I walked through my doors.
Yeah.
And all my mother did was care. And clearly I did not show that I appreciated that. So I was constantly punished for my attitude. But what parents can do is instead of the questions that bring those answers, the nothing or I'm fine, Or just that sigh.
Yeah.
Instead, we need to change the messages that we give to adolescents. And we need to remember all of the time, I'm older, I'm better educated, therefore I am the one in control here.
Right.
And I am the one responsible for acting differently. So we have to change the message.
Yeah.
I told one of our parents just recently, instead of telling your son before he goes to school every day, "Make me proud," because that actual message of "make me proud" was bothering him so badly all day long that it actually kept him from doing his work.
Oh,
he was so scared of not making her proud.
Sure, because if he didn't do well on a test, then she wouldn't be proud of him.
Because he loves his mother so much.
Oh.
So I asked the mother to do one thing, change the message to, "I love you."
Yeah.
And that's all she needs to say at the end. And I said, write a card and put it, index card, and put it right by the door.
Yeah.
And when he leaves for school in the morning, say, "I love you." And on the other side of that card, you write, don't tell him,
don't
make me proud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem, is that particularly 13, 14, 15, they listen very carefully to everything that parents say.
Yes.
But they can't let you know that they do. And so you change the message. If they're not getting back the answers that you want, just change what you say to the child.
Right.
The second thing is, with that, is change the behavior. So if you're asking the child every day when he comes home, "How was your day?" Stop asking.
Yeah.
Pretend like the child's not there. Just, "Oh, hi," and keep going with your own business. It is plain hard to get. It is reverse psychology.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah.
It absolutely works. It is funny.
Don't get in my face, but then if you're not in my face, why not?
Exactly. Well, how do your children handle it? They don't like it when you don't pay attention.
Oh, gosh, no.
Right.
Yes.
And that only increases as they get older.
That's why every phone call I have, it's with them fighting in the background, because my attention's not on them.
Right.
It's on the phone.
Right.
Yes, the great parent mystery.
Right.
Why do you do this every time I get on the phone? Yeah.
Right. It's because you're not focused on me right now, mommy. And so that's it. They crave that very thing.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of parents are shaking their heads, not believing me, but I will tell you this too, and I know you know this, that the biggest reward to a child is not any food, it's no gift, it's not even a trip, it's what?
I would say time.
With your parents.
Yeah.
And every child you and I have ever spoken to, ever spent time with, ever taught, ever counseled, has said, all I want is quiet time with my parents.
Yeah.
And it's the one thing that parents, it's the hardest thing
it's
for parents
the
to find
thing at
to
that
give.
Age especially.
And yet, once parents start giving it, they become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize that 5-10 minutes, keep up, instead of reading bedtime stories to your 15-year-old at night, go into his room, you know, because of issues, you want to hop on the bed, I suppose, but you could, depending on your child. But don't leave. 10 minutes. And you make yourself stay there for 10 minutes, and the child won't talk to you, doesn't matter. Go there 10 minutes every single night, and you will suddenly find that the relationship between you and your child will change.
And I've always found, I don't know why, but middle school, high school kids always like me. And I honestly don't know why. I've never been able to pinpoint it. I know, but I never know why. But part of it is not because I love their music, but I'll listen to it. And they think it's amusing that I'll sit there and listen to something that they like to listen to. Even the horrified look on my face,
yes,
they think is funny. But I'm taking the time to listen to it. And I mean, my oldest niece, love her to death, got to put that on it. Her and I are, you know, have always been, and she's butted heads with my mom or my sister, and it's her and I have always been, but I just take that little bit of time with her and she'll tell me anything.
And that's all it is.
She will tell me anything.
That's all it is. And
things I don't want to know now that she's 21, but she'll tell me anything.
With pre-adolescence in particular, they are still prone to temper tantrums. And those temper tantrums are very scary to parents because you're not used to seeing them. And they become very intensive and usually public. And it is always because of fear. It's never because of anything else. It really is because of fear.
Yeah.
And if parents would just understand, this goes back to changing the message, changing the behavior.
Yeah.
Instead of saying the same thing over and over again, like probably one of the worst things that parents say to kids is it's going to be okay or calm down in the very moment when they are most upset. Instead, you just say, I'm here.
Yeah.
That's all you say.
Yeah.
I'm here and I'm not leaving.
That's important.
And
I'm not leaving part.
I'm not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said to kids in my office when I've helped them get upset, you need to get all the way upset. I'm not leaving you. And you're not leaving this office till I know that you're back to, you know, happy self again. But it needs to be okay. I'm not going anywhere. And that's a strong message for all of us. I mean, my husband has said that to me about my whole Muppet Face business this week. You know, it's, I'm not giving up. We're going to figure this out. You know, that's very comforting to us.
It is.
A lot more than when I was getting very hysterical about this whole thing. If he had said calm down, he knows I probably would have had full-blown temper tantrum. The message calm down actually suggests that there's something horribly wrong with you. And that you need to adjust your behavior.
Yes, my problem.
Yeah. And the truth is that it is that child's problem. It is the adolescent's problem.
Actually, I just did exactly how it makes me feel. That talk to the hand thing, that I don't, just calm yourself down. It's, dismissal.
And that's exactly right. And in regards to like pre-adolescent children, that's probably one of the worst messages because you're already telling, they already know there's something wrong with them, but they don't know how to tell you that. And so we only make it worse by pointing out there's something wrong by telling them to calm down. So, but that's not something that is instinctive to any of us at all. And it wasn't to me either.
No, because we want them to calm down.
Right.
That's what we want.
Right. Particularly when you're in public.
Please. Yeah.
Particularly in public. And so how do you fix that? How do you fix the temper tantrums and all of that in public in particular? Well, you wait till you get home. You wait till the child is completely calmed down.
Yeah.
And here is my probably third and most important tip, or fourth and most important tip, which is when your child needs to be punished, when your pre-adolescent or adolescent needs to be punished, punish the child. Do it. But also, then there needs to be a second component, which is to go back, close the door quietly, sit down with the child, and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And really listen to why it happened, how it happened, what the child was thinking, what the child was worried about, and then correct all of those things.
Yes.
because they need to hear that you love them no matter what. They need to hear that they're going to make mistakes. And how are you going to handle that as a family? You know, that later on in our second, the second episode of this, when we talk about specific adolescent issues, we'll talk about, like, with the drinking issue. A lot of times in prevention, we tell parents to make a pact with their child that if the child does indeed drink and shouldn't be, that the child is at least understands to call home for a ride home, and there will not be repercussions for that.
Yeah.
There'll be repercussions for the drinking, but not for being called to pick up.
Yeah.
So those are pretty much the ones I had. Can you think of any others?
I can't, because my brain is so full of information right now, I don't think it's actually functioning.
All right, well, I think with that, we'll end,
we'll
end for today. And, oh, that's right, we were going to ask them.
Yes, we were going to ask everybody, if you have any questions or any topic ideas or anything along those lines that you would like to contact us, we have a Gmail account. It's 411child@gmail.com. So if you have anything you would like to ask us so that we can address it on future podcasts, just let us know.
And we will be posting the second one in this series, in Explaining Adolescence, within the next week or so. And what we would like to do is, if you have any questions, please send again to our email account, 411child@gmail.com, and we'll incorporate your question into that podcast and get an answer for you. So thank you so much for listening.